You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today, most of you probably learned, like I did early this morning, that singer and actor David Bowie died. And it really surprised a lot of people because he was battling cancer for about 18 months. And it just wasn't known that he was even sick. And the world learned today of his death. Now, he had a birthday on January 8th, which makes him 69. And that was the day his last album was released, Black Star. And then 2 days later, we all learned the sad news that he passed away. Now, I normally do not play music during my show. I want to play a few of his songs, some of the ones you're most familiar with. But I ran across, I need to say something, I'm not really a Davy Bowie fan, although he always struck me as being an original. The way I would describe him is a constantly changing entertainer extraordinaire. He really pushed the boundaries and got people's attention. But I ran across a song. Now, I wasn't familiar with this. It's been out many years, but really, it's very timely, and I want to play it. It's called Seven.
Listen to the shadows. I play among the graves. My heart was never broken. My patience never tried. I've got 7 days to live my life. 7 ways to die. 7 days to live my life, or 7 ways to die. 7 7 7.
That was the late David Bowie singing his song Seven. And for those that are not familiar with David Bowie's life, I ran across an excellent documentary. I highly recommend it. And I vaguely remember viewing it at one time. And I've included it in my show notes, and that's why I'm bringing it to your attention. And for those unfamiliar or first-time listeners of the Prot Pop Show, the way you listen to the show is go to protpops.wordpress.com. That's protpops.wordpress.com. You spell that protpops.wordpress.com. And at the very top, under my photograph, you'll see the most recent 60 to 80 shows. So just click on, this is show 601. So just click on it, and it'll be posted sometime tomorrow, usually before 5 o'clock, because the campus is still not completely open because classes begin the 20th. So while we have people registering for classes this week, we still don't have the labs open to 9 or 10 o'clock, so that means I do my post-production the next day. Usually I have the show up the same day I broadcast it. Obviously, if you're listening on KDUX Web Radio, you're listening to the show right now, but most of my listeners, over 99.99%, listen to this show at their convenience by either streaming the podcast or downloading the podcast and then listening it when they want. So the name of that documentary is called David Bowie, Sound and Vision. Now, I don't have time to play the whole thing, and I'm not, but I wanted to just, because you're probably not familiar with the early years of David Bowie, so I wanted to play just a few, maybe 30 seconds to a minute of Sound and Vision that might get your interest.
An arty type walking around in his art school type clothes with his art school chums.
We used to walk around Bromley, try and pulling as many birds as we could, thinking that we were God's gift, talking about being famous.
By 1962, a new group called the Beatles was creating waves in Britain. And 15-year-old David set out to make some noise of his own. That summer, the budding rocker began testing his talent in a series of bands. His first, the Conrads, covered pop tunes and lasted about a year. He and friend George Underwood next formed an R&B group, the King Bees. With David now calling himself Davy Jones, the band even cut a single. It went nowhere. When the King Bees broke up soon after, George Underwood set his sights on becoming a graphic artist. But David was devastated by the split.
He said, it's all right for you. You've got your art. For me, this is my life. I know what he meant. It's like sort of he'd committed himself and he's got to go. There's no turning back.
With the Beatles' invasion of America and the growing popularity of Britain's newest sensation, the Rolling Stones, David was even more determined to find fame as a musician. His next band was the Mannish Boys, and he had a plan to make sure people heard more from the group than just their music.
That's just a excerpt from the documentary Sound and Vision. It's an hour and 26 minutes, so it's fairly long, and I sort of just picked it up towards the beginning, not the very beginning, and there's some interesting information that I know most people simply aren't aware of. So I strongly recommend it. A number of people that have viewed it also think it's one of the best documentaries on him. So it is available at YouTube, as well as in my notes. I've embedded it in my notes, because that's what I do with my show notes. I show you some of the videos, some of the articles that I have listened to or watched in preparing the show. Now, I want to play one more song. Well, actually, two more songs. And I thought this was an interesting song, because if you're watching the Globe Awards, I wasn't. David Bowie had an interesting song entitled Life on Mars. And let's play it.
Yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for, for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools as they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's the freakiest show. Take a look at her. Is there life on Mars? It's on America's tortured brow. Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Rule Britannia is out of bounds to my mother, my dog and clown. But the film is a sad thing for, 'cause I wrote it 10 times or more. It's about to be writ again, as I ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's a freakiest show. Take a look at the old man, beating up the wrong guy. Oh man, wonder if he'll ever know who's in the best-selling show. Is there life on
That was David Bowie singing his song, Is There Life on Mars? Now, you're probably asking me, what is my favorite David Bowie song, or what's your favorite David Bowie song? Now, many of you that are attending Richland College may or may not know the name David Bowie. He really was a star in the 70s and 80s. He kept on going, though, and writing songs. But my favorite, by far, and I'm scrolling down, and it's, I have probably 2 dozen videos, so I'm not, certainly don't have time to play them all, and not going to play them all. This is not, this is mainly a talk show, not a disc jockey playing his favorite tunes and giving his comments. But my favorite is Let's Dance. That was David Bowie singing Let's Dance. The video is an excellent one to watch because it's set in Australia and it tells a very short story. So again, I'd recommend watching and listening to that video, David Bowie, Let's Dance. Finally, to wrap up this segment on David Bowie, I want to play his from his very last album, Black Star, David Bowie. Is just the first part of David Bowie's last album, Black Star, the first 3 minutes. I'm not going to play the entire song, but it is available if you go to prankpops.wordpress.com as well as YouTube. All of the videos and music I'm playing is from YouTube. So you can get, if you go to YouTube, type in David Bowie, name of the song or the documentary, you can get them. Or you could go to my page for this show, my companion blog page for this show, that'll have quite a fairly comprehensive list of his songs, his hits over the many years that he was active. And he was still active till really to the very end, and he's always trying to push boundaries, and I think you can see that in his Black Star video. The video is very interesting, so I encourage you to definitely go to YouTube or go to my blog, prankpops.wordpress.com, and sample it, especially if you're totally unfamiliar with the work, both the singing and the acting. I forgot to mention, he was a very good actor, but he never really pursued it to the extent of his singing career, and this is my opinion. I think he could have been a great actor had he pursued that, but apparently that's not what he wanted to do. Everyone chooses his path, chooses what road he's going to take, and David Bowie was primarily a singer, but he was constantly changing. I think he was an outstanding entertainer, and I think that's what he'll be known for. He's not everyone's cup of tea. And really, he had a reputation for putting out pop songs that teenagers like, especially females like, 15, 16 years old. But he really wanted to make a statement. He did make a statement. And he definitely is going to be missed. Now, with that, I'd like to change the pace somewhat. And I'm looking at the time. I really was going to develop, when I walked in the studio, this was going to be the primary focus of the show. But I spent a lot of time preparing for the David Bowie segment, really looking and listening to all of his work to get a better handle of it. Because it's been a while since I've listened to any of his songs. And I, like I said, I wasn't a fan, and I'm glad I did. But what I really wanted to talk about, getting back to politics, everyone thinks that the race will be between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Not everybody, but right now that's where the smart money is. Who's going to be the candidate for the Democratic Party? Hillary Clinton. Who's going to be the candidate of the Republican Party? Donald Trump. Now remember, there has not been one primary yet. And we're first one will be the 1st of February, then the 8th, first in Iowa, then in New Hampshire. And right now, both Donald Trump and Ted Cruz are running neck and neck. And in third place is Marco Rubio. Who do I think is going to win? I don't know. I have no idea. And see, the question is, although Donald Trump is definitely the leader for the Republican candidates, by a wide margin, he's roughly in the high 30s, 40s, depending on which poll you look at, whether it's national or in the state. Obviously, in the state contest, his numbers are lower. But nationally, the front runner is clearly Donald Trump. And what has been happening, when you're looking at these polls, they're really snapshots. You got to look at the trend, and the trend for Donald Trump has been up, up, and up. Now, many people, I never really fell in this camp, thought, well, he does have his base. He does have a floor, and it's a rather solid floor, but he doesn't really have much ceiling, which is another way of saying he's not going to appeal to a lot of voters. So while he might get, let's say, 25% or maybe as high as 30%, that's about it. Now, that's the conventional wisdom. I don't believe in the conventional wisdom for the simple reason the American people, the voters, are not happy with either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party because they simply have been lied to, misled, and many, like myself, have left. In my case, it was the Republican Party, but I have people that are friends of mine that were in the Democratic Party also left because they felt that they simply, neither party was addressing their concerns. And the chief concern today, and it's not new, it's a pocketbook issue, it's jobs. But related to jobs is illegal immigration and the fact that illegal aliens, as well as legal immigrants, compete with the American people for jobs. They're very much related. And because both parties are not addressing really the immigration situation, especially the illegal alien situation, people have left. Now, there are many reasons why people leave political parties. I left the Republican Party, in 2006 because I finally woke up to the fact that under George W. Bush, a basic principle of conservatism is fiscal responsibility. In other words, balancing the budget. And George Bush, together with the House of Representatives and the Senate, controlled by the Republican Party, simply was not and really was making very few efforts to bring the budget in balance. And what we are running are deficits in the hundreds of billions of dollars, year in, year out. Yes, we were fighting the Iraqi war, and that was part of the problem, but there are other reasons why it was growing. So when the Republicans had control of the presidency, the Senate, and the House, they weren't fiscally responsible. They weren't balancing the budget. They were making no attempts to do it. They were very arrogant about it. And I said, as a limited government conservative, if you listen to the show, you know I call myself, my political philosophy is classical liberalism, sometimes equated to, and they're close, with being a libertarian. And I'm for very much a limited government. People ask me, well, how much? I think you could cut the federal government by half, and most people would not miss that half. And that's where we are. We have a government, whether it's under control of the Democrats or Republicans, that is just getting larger and larger. We have a two-party system that basically are big government parties. Oh, yeah, they differ as to where they want to spend the money. The Democratic Party largely wants to spend it by, first of all, on welfare programs, and we have a slew of them, as well as increasing entitlements. Even though we're running massive deficits in both Social Security and Medicare, that's what they're about. In other words, piling on more, having more and more deficits every year and more national debt. For those that are not, many people are confused with the word deficit and debt. A deficit is where the government spends more money than it takes in tax revenues or tax collections. So it's overspending. Now, most individuals, families, households, businesses, as well as government entities such as schools, universities, cities, states, counties, have to balance their budget. They must live within the means of the American people to support that type of spending. And what's happened in Washington under both Democratic and Republican administrations is the size of those deficits have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. Even under Bush, I think his last deficit was $459 billion, if my memory serves me. Now, you got to keep in mind that there was a revolt of the American people. In 2006, what happened? The American people voted for the Democrats in many, many states to such a degree that the Republican Party lost control of both the House and the Senate. Both the House and the Senate. That was a mid-year or midterm election. George Bush narrowly won the 2004 election, and that surprised a lot of Democrats. But in 2010, the American people spoke clearly that they had enough of Republican big spending, and they voted him out. Not all, but it was significant change that control changed. And then Obama was elected, and at that point, the Democrats controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency, just like the Republicans did under George Bush. Now, I point out the election of 2010 for this reason. The big deficits, the huge deficits, especially under George Bush the last 2 years, as well as starting with Obama, that's where they really took off. And remember, all money bills, all tax bills, as well as spending bills, must originate in the House of Representatives. So while you can blame the last 2 years of the Bush administration on out-of-control spending and huge deficits, it was really the Democratic control of the House and Senate that resulted in the really uptick in the deficits, going to first over $400 billion and then in the trillions, over $1,000 billion. So no matter who you voted for, whether it was a Democratic candidate or Republican candidate, little really changed. If anything, it got worse under the Democrats. The first 3 years of the Obama administration, the deficits were over $1,400 billion, then $1,300 billion, and then very close to $1,300 billion. In other words, $1.4 trillion, $1.3 trillion, and rounded $1.3 trillion. Several times the biggest deficits under George Bush. And that's why I think many people now have left not only the Republican Party, but also the Democratic Party. They know we have a government that's out of control. Both parties have what I call SAD, spending addiction disorder. And you really don't have much of a choice. It's like when you go to a grocery store, you either have plastic or paper. Well, now you have, and we've had now since over 175 years, roughly, your choice has been either Democrat or Republican. Well, more and more people are leaving both parties to such an extent that Gallup does polls, and independents today are typically between 40 to 50% in terms of that's the party affiliation. The last one I looked at, it was right around 43%. Now, those numbers change, and that's why I say a poll is just a snapshot. The more important lesson from that poll that Gallup takes of political affiliation is independents are growing in number to the point that I think within the next 4 to 8 years, if not sooner, that the majority of voters will be independents. In other words, they won't be registered Republicans and they won't be registered Democrats. And at that point, you're going to see a third party, a successful third party. Now, remember, Donald Trump, there's always been a suspicion that Donald Trump was going to run as a third-party candidate. In other words, he wouldn't run as a Democrat nor as a Republican. And because of that, when Donald Trump announced, I believe it was in mid-June or mid-July, I've sort of lost track, but I believe it's the middle of June, that he was running for president on the Republican Party ticket, that turned a lot of heads. And that really upset the political establishment of the Republican Party. And there was a lot of name-calling. The common refrain was, he's not serious, he's a spoiler, he's like Ross Perot, he just wants to defeat the Republican candidate, in other words, split the vote so Hillary Clinton would be president of the United States. And that was, some people had the theory that the only reason Donald Trump is running is to split the Republican vote so Hillary Clinton, a Democrat, would win. Now, I wasn't in that camp. I said, well, let's give him a chance. If he really is running and is serious about it, and I, ladies and gentlemen, I've long time ago concluded he is very much serious. He wants to win. In other words, he wants to win not only the nomination, he wants to win the election. That's what he's about. He's not doing this for fun. There are a lot of other, when you're that wealthy, there are a lot of other things that you can do with your life that are more pleasurable, more fun, will make you more happy than to run for president. When you run for president, your life is going to be examined. They will attack. The press will attack you. And he knew he was going to get criticism from both the Democratic Party establishment and the Republican Party establishment. And the media would be all against him. He knew that. And that's exactly what's happened. Now, the early months when he was running, the critics were, I think, vicious would be a fairly accurate description. And that really reflected the, I think, bitterness, especially amongst the leaders of the Republican Party, as well as the Republican candidates that were running for president. Why is he doing this? He's spoiling it for us. And the conventional wisdom was that Jeb Bush, yes, that Jeb Bush, was going to win. He was the establishment candidate's pick, and he got off to a quick start in January of that year, lining up a lot of commitments from the donor class, from the very wealthy, the very rich, the multimillionaires, the multi-billionaires that contributed to not only a super PAC, but also to him, his candidacy, as well as the Republican Party. So the race was going to be between Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush. Today, Jeb Bush, he's lucky if he breaks 5% in the poll, depending on which poll you're looking at. Now, I think what's going to be really give you a sharp indication of what's going to happen is the race in Florida. Who's going to win the race in Florida? I think it's going to be Donald Trump. Now, what you need to know about Florida, and I forget the date it occurs. It's not too far off in the next 90 days. I forget the exact date, though. It's winner take all, and that's the important point. Many of these early primaries, it's proportional. So depending on the percentage of votes you get, you're going to get some delegates. But then you're going to run into the states where it's winner take all, such as Florida. And that's very much a make or break situation for two, actually, I think all three of the candidates. Florida is a very important swing state. And if you win in Florida, you're going to get all the delegates. And obviously, that's where Jeb Bush was governor. So it's incumbent on Jeb Bush to win Florida. I don't think he is going to win Florida. I don't think he has a prayer, but I could be wrong. I don't follow Florida politics. My brother's in Florida. He's not a fan of, he's a Democrat, by the way, and he's not a fan of Jeb Bush. Now, the other candidate that now I think is assumed the role of establishment candidate, although you'll get an argument from both Jeb Bush and Chris Christie on this, is Marco Rubio. And again, he's the senator from Florida that's getting a lot of attack ads run against him by Jeb Bush. Namely, he's never there because he's running for president, which is a valid criticism, but I think Marco Rubio has a much, much bigger problem, as does Jeb Bush, and that is on the immigration issue. You see, Jeb Bush, while he's for comprehensive immigration reform, is simply very squishy on immigration. In other words, deep down, he wants open borders, but won't say that. Now, what he's saying, his position is he wants to reform the immigration laws. There's a big problem with that. Several occasions, first when his brother was president, and now when Barack Obama is president, And continuing up today, the majority of the American people simply want immigration law enforced. In other words, you don't need to change the laws. The problem is not that the system is broken. That's what you hear from Jeb Bush. That's what you hear from Marco Rubio. That's what you hear from Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Chris Christie. The immigration system is broken. Well, who broke it? That's the question you should ask. Well, who broke it? Who broke it was George Bush and Barack Obama. Why? They did not enforce immigration law. And because of that, that explains, as far as I'm concerned, the fact that Jeb Bush is not the establishment candidate and won't be. And for that matter, neither will Marco Rubio might get more campaign contributions, assuming he can beat not only Bush, but Trump and Cruz, and I don't think he can. He's running either third, fourth, or fifth in most states. You don't run third, fourth, and fifth and get the nomination. You might get support early on if you can pull one or two of these primaries out and get more money. And that's what's driving the political establishment, what I call the political elitist establishment. The P's are panicking and they're going crazy. They don't know how to stop Trump or Cruz, and they don't want either of them to be the Republican candidate for president. And I've said on a previous show what I think is going to happen, if you ask me, is Donald Trump will be at the top of the ticket, Republican ticket, in the presidential slot, and number two will be Ted Cruz. Now, we're many months away before that is the case. That's sheer speculation on my part. Remember, the convention, I believe, is towards the end of June, the Republican convention. So in roughly, we have February, March, April, May, June. We have 5 months. In 5 months, we definitely should. I don't believe at all that we're going to have a broker convention. Not at all. But time will tell. And that's what you got to keep in mind. You need to get out the vote. And that's something that needs to be emphasized. Donald Trump is very, very good when he gives his stump speech in drawing crowds. Wherever he goes, people attend the so-called rallies. He attracts thousands, where most of these candidates can't even attract 100. And I think if people are going to spend the time and effort to go to a Trump event, a Trump rally, not all of them, but a good number of them are going to go to the polls. So in that sense, he does have a floor, and it's fairly high. Like I said, I think it's at least 25 to 30%. And when you have so many people running, that makes you the front runner alone. Now, in other states, he's in the 30s. Now, the one thing that's interesting, one of the lines that a number of the establishment candidates are using against Trump is, well, maybe he can get the nomination, but he can't beat Hillary. But I can. And I've heard Jeb Bush say that. I think I mentioned that on a previous show. I was listening to some talk radio. And I turned it off because after about 3 or 4 minutes, I didn't want to listen to him. Because my immediate question is, well, excuse me, Mr. Bush, if you can't beat Donald Trump, as a matter of fact, he's in the polls at least, he's running 6, 7, 8 times in terms of percentages over you. What makes you think you're going to beat Hillary Clinton? I mean, the logic truly escapes me. Now, what George Bush is trying to say is, well, I'm in it for the long haul, and ultimately, I'm going to come back. He's going to be the comeback kid. And I'm running my positions or more what the general public wants, and because of that, I'll win over Hillary Clinton. I have news for him. You're not going to be the candidate. And in a couple of weeks, that is going to be clear. And after the Florida primary, it's going to be very, very clear to everybody. And I can be wrong. Like I said, I have no terrific insight. I'm just following the polls like everyone else is. And what's clear, if you go to the internals of the polls, is Donald Trump is attracting a lot of Democrats. And if you're in the Republican Party, they have been saying for years, well, we have to broaden our base. That's true, because the Republican base has been shrinking. That's the dirty little secret. Actually, both the Democrat and Republican parties voter base has been shrinking. Roughly now, about 25% of the voter base is Republican, and about 30% is Democrat. And if you look at it in terms of the Electoral College, it's very, very close. And some would say, not me, some would say it's almost impossible for a Republican to beat Hillary Clinton. Well, a lot of that is just the media. The media, mainly television. Most of the people on the major networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, as well as the major print media such as the New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, they're liberal. They're liberal progressive. In the last two elections, they have been in the tank. Namely, they've been for Barack Obama. They protected him. They hide. They hid a lot of information on his background that if it had come out during the primaries, where it usually is, as far as I'm concerned, he never would have got the nomination. But they wanted Barack Obama. They supported Barack Obama. They got him. And now they have a problem. It hasn't worked out too well. I think objectively, his presidency has been a failure, a disaster, both in foreign policy and domestically. The economy is stagnating. It's growing at rough somewhere between 2 and 2.5%. Oh, yeah, we got a good jobs report last week. And it was. But the problem is, if you really want to reduce the unemployment rate near full employment, which is about 3%, you'll get an argument amongst economists. Well, what's the so-called natural rate of full employment? See, I'm a trained economist. When I was going to graduate school, it was 3%. Then it got increased to 4%, and today it's 5%. You see, I can remember when politicians would panic when the unemployment rate got above 4% and really get scared if it was over 5%. And today, oh, we're doing well at 5%. No, you're not. And that 5% number is really, really, if you examine it, very misleading. Because like I said on the last show, you got to look at the civilian labor force participation rate. That should be, if the economy was truly booming and growing at above the trend line of 3 and 3.5%, and that's the long-term average running for decades, depending on when you start and end, the economy should at least on average be growing between 3 and 5%, not at between 2 and 2.5%. And remember, we're in the sixth year of the recovery. Most recoveries, we usually have a recession every 5 to 7 years. So we're about overdue about having a recession. And this has been by far the worst economic recovery that we've had post-World War II and actually post-Depression. It's not been very good. And that's the problem. And that's why I say jobs, jobs, jobs is the issue. And the candidate that makes it the issue combined with the immigration issue, because immigration is first and foremost a job issue. It's also a national security issue. It's a crime issue, and it's also a drug issue. And the reason why Donald Trump is in the lead is he has picked immigration, both illegal and legal immigration, to be his primary center stage issue. He's out in front of this on everyone, and that's why he's attracting these crowds, because the American people have had it up to here with both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party too concerned with illegal aliens that shouldn't be here. By law, they should be deported. They're more concerned about illegal aliens than American citizens, the American worker. It's not hard to understand why Donald Trump is in the lead. If you pick the right issue, where 70 to 80% of the voters are on your side, guess what? You're going to attract Democrats, Republicans, and independents. In other words, that is the way Donald Trump has separated himself from the crowd. You see, today, if you ask a Republican candidate, well, what's your position on illegal aliens being in the country? The first thing out of their mouths, and this includes Donald Trump, by the way, we have to secure the borders. Well, I've been hearing that for 15 years, and the border is not secure. Every year, approximately 3 to 5 million illegal aliens break into this country. Now, I must admit that about a million go home. And that's not unexpected, because historically, whether you're talking legal immigration or illegal immigration, a large percentage, roughly about 30-35%, go home. They don't like it here. They can't succeed, so they go home. But that means every year, 2, 3, 4 million stay. A million go home. Now, this is not my numbers. People have talked to the U.S. Border Patrol. And what they've asked them is, for every one you apprehend at the border, how many get away? They say at the minimum, it's three. Every one they apprehend, at least three get away. But the real number is somewhere between 5 and 7. We don't know. It varies. It goes up and down. And I emphasize this. Until Barack Obama came into office, the U.S. Border Patrol was apprehending, on average, around 1 million people at the U.S. border. Now, remember, upwards of 40% or more come here legally and overstay their visas. The border is just part of the problem. An equally important part are people that come here from many countries legally on a visa, student visa, tourist visa, business visa, and overstay. That's why I say, don't believe this 11 or 12 million dollars. 12 million people number. It's somewhere between 30 and 50 million. Now, I'm somewhat repeating myself, but what I'm trying to say, the reason why Donald Trump is the front runner, and I think the reason why he'll get the nomination, he's right on the immigration issue. That's very important. So while all the Republican candidates can say, well, I want to secure the border, Donald Trump has made very clear he wants to take it a step further. The illegal aliens that are here have to go home. And they might come back, provided they have to come back. In other words, get back in line, because we have a pathway to citizenship. It's called legal immigration. Because Donald Trump has emphasized this, that's why American voters, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, or independents, will come out to the primaries and vote for him. That's why he's ahead of everybody. It's not hard to understand. Now, the other issue that he's emphasized, and I went into this a little bit last show, he's very much for free trade, but he's also for fair trade, because we have countries that are cheating on the treaties that they've signed, and most of the countries today are part of the WTO, the World Trade Organization. I'm looking at the time. I really need to wrap this up. And if you cheat on it, and the most common way, and this is what I was getting into last show, is by devaluing your currency. And that's what China has done. Now, there's this long history that I can't get into. But recently, and this year, twice now, they've significantly devalued their currency by printing money in exchange for the dollars that their exporters get. Well, what that means, when any nation, through its central banks, prints money, the money outstanding is worth less, less, and less. So the money is devalued or debased, which makes Chinese goods and services, mainly goods, makes it less expensive for example, shoppers at Walmart, because it makes the dollar more valuable or more expensive. Now, if you're a U.S. citizen wanting to go to China as a tourist, that's in your favor, because now you can buy more in China. But the reason why the Chinese do this is not to get U.S. tourists here, is to sell goods to not only the United States, but the European Union. So they're engaged in what's called currency manipulation. And the last time, I believe it was in 1992, January 1992, that the United States has called China officially a currency manipulation was many, many years ago. Now, over that time period, China has both appreciated as well as depreciated or devalued, debased their currency. In other words, they manipulated their currency to their benefit. Now, why is China doing it? And this is what you need to understand. The population of China is over 1.3 billion people, or over 1,300 million people. They have to create a lot of jobs. And if they're going to stay in power, if the Communist Party is going to stay in power, they have to employ people. Because if they have widespread unemployment, they'll have political unrest and could be overthrown. So one of them, Their number one priority, ladies and gentlemen, is jobs, jobs, jobs. We have to employ our people. That is their number one concern because they don't want to lose power. And that means they have to make sure their currency is cheap vis-a-vis other currencies, the U.S. dollar. Their currency is the yuan. And that's what's happened because they're afraid to go into recession. And it does make Chinese goods cheaper. So that's what's happening. And what Donald Trump has emphasized is he believes in not only free trade, but fair trade. In other words, what I think Donald Trump will do is go to the World Trade Organization and call China a currency manipulator. That's what they're doing. Because he's already said if he became president, he'd renegotiate the deals. And I think he would. In other words, he'd make sure that the nations that have agreed to treaties and they're part of the WTO live up to their rules. Now, I made a point, and this is an important point. All nations, to varying degrees, are manipulating their currency. Our Federal Reserve, our central bank, does that. How? Since December of 2008, we've had what's called a near-zero interest rate policy. The federal funds rate was brought down and kept, deliberately kept, at an artificially low rate of 25 basis points or 0.25%. 0.25%. Now, you can't get that. That's the overnight rate when banks have to banks lend to each another because they have to meet a reserve requirement. And if they fall short, what they have to do is borrow overnight some reserves from other banks that have excess reserves. And that rate has been until December of last year. I have to wrap it up. Since December of last year has been at 25 basis points. It's gone up another 25 basis points. And the Federal Reserve says over the next 3 years, every quarter, it will probably increase it. You can't hold their feet to this, 25 basis points. Now, I've been saying for a couple of years, as have other economists, they should have been starting this a couple of years ago. They're rather slow on the upkeep. So Donald Trump is emphasizing he wants free trade. Now, I have some more to say because what I really will go into tomorrow is the fact that I think it's not impossible. We might have Bernie Sanders being the Democratic candidate and, again, Donald Trump being the president. And that's what Donald Trump said today. Wouldn't that be the dream candidate to run against? And I agree. We wouldn't have an echo. We'd really have a choice for a change. Now let me close the show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.